having the ECG in front of us, then let's start.
Thank you, Chair. We'll just zoom in into the presentation. Bearing in mind the letters that were sent to us on the issues with respect to our third quarter report, the APP and the implementation of the APP, as well as our financial report relating to the APP of the CGE, as well as snapshots on SONA, and its implication on gender related matters. And within the APP presentation, there will be the Commissioner's report as well as first requested by this committee. And so I will, through your permission, I'll hand over to the CEO of the Commission to attend to present. But we have familiar faces in front of us, so myself, the Deputy Chair, the CEO, the Chief Financial Officer, and our Cape Town based Commissioner, Advocate Nkosi. And we also have our parliamentary officers this year. We have our researcher, Sandy Ngobeni, from Cape Town, Deputy. And the other visitors from the department, our sister department, just here to observe.
You said sister? And where's the brother? Where's the brother?
What is?
It's over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I think as was already highlighted, we'll quickly go through our quarter three report from performance information, and then we will look at briefly at SONA. And then we will then look into the finances that speaks to the expenditure that was done in terms of running these processes. I think first quarter, as we always highlighted, first quarter where we really try and do a lot of work as we are right at the final end of the financial year. Because normally fourth quarter is all about consolidation and report writing and the like. So like any other financial year, this is exactly what we did. Tied to the third quarter is always processes for planning as well for the next financial year. And that is some of the activities that we also undertook for the Commission in terms of planning. And as we're planning, just to highlight that we were particularly excited as the Commission, if you look at quite a number of things, new things that are coming up globally, regionally, and of course nationally, as we are putting our agenda forward. A lot of processes have taken place where MDGs, we now have SDGs in place, and we now have AU's Agenda 2030. 2030 seems to be the year where, you know, everybody wants to have done something, taking into account our own NDP 2030 as well. So as we were planning, we were looking at all the 2030s, VG 2030, AU 2030, and of course the NDP 2030. So then put specific issues or targets that, or things that we will be looking at as far as those processes are concerned. And of course, primarily what we are engaging with today was to ensure that the work as planned in the ACP is also achieved. For the current reporting period, we commission is sitting at approximately 33.3. As I always claim, that percentage doesn't come from me, it comes from the internal auditor's report. So they are the ones that, once we have finalized our report, they then audit it and then give us the numbers. So it's always better to utilize them because they use the same methods that the AG uses. So it's better to rather align ourselves with that. And if you look where we are, looking into the fact that in quarter one we reported 60%, quarter two it was 33.9, which tends to be 34%, and now we are sitting at 33.3. And if you average that, that means we are at 70% for the full financial year as far as work is concerned. And that sort of gives us comfort that we will be able to reach all the targets in the APP. Of course, taking into account that some of our targets, as it is, they also rely on a third party to have done something. So there will be those specific ones that will be, if we are not done, it will be because there's a third party that would have had to do something, and we'll look into that as I go through the strategic objectives. And for this particular quarter as well, one thing that we have started is our red card, green card campaign. This campaign is tied to all the work that we've been doing as far as gender mainstreaming is concerned, specifically the transformation hearings and some of the reports that we have. And what we have decided to do is, because with all these reports we engage with specific departments and we engage with specific policymakers on some of these issues, we've taken that process a bit further to say, as far as we've engaged with you on your recommendations and the findings, if we find that you have not implemented any of our recommendations, then we are going to start to have a campaign, a media campaign out there that then either gives you a red card or a green card, depending on whether you have done or taken heed of some of the recommendations that we've given forward. So in preparation for running that red card, green card campaign, which we want to do in the fourth quarter, we have written several letters to all the entities, and we've said, these are the recommendations that we had for you, and these were the findings. How far are these findings still relevant? If not, give us information that shows that you've moved. Otherwise, then we are going to then give you a red card. So that's one of the issues that we've been dealing with. And of course, the fourth quarter as well is where we also have 16 days of activism. And I know that the committee is well aware that for this financial year, due to financial constraints, we did not have the normal planning of specific activities for 16 days. But however, we ensured that our communication department really takes our work out there, and there's quite a lot that we have been able to do. We've done some documentaries, we've flighted some PSA adverts, we've done some social media campaigns, and I think this has really highlighted great work that can still be reached or achieved when you have strategic partners as well, because for us to have been able to do this is because of some of the strategic partnerships that we've had through our communications department. Just then to look specifically into the APP and progress thereon. We know our strategic objectives. I normally try to put a slide there just to remind ourselves, and then the sub-strategies that speak to that. To ensure creation and implementation of an enabling legislative framework, where we have quite a number of processes that we do in terms of monitoring and evaluating promotion of gender equality, initiating and reviewing legislative frameworks, and conducting some periodic assessments and all that. And for progress, as far as submissions are concerned, for the quarter we've been able to have 5 submissions. And we have had quite a number of numerous engagements, and we've participated in quite a number of forums looking into various proposed legislations. We know that we have Ukutwala hearings happening now. We have the victim empowerment hearings taking place. So those are some of the activities that we have been able to engage with. During this particular quarter as well, we saw the Justice Department coming forward wanting to engage with various stakeholders on the traditional courts bill once again. Even though they did not really have a specific submission, but they were engaging on the basis of specific principles that they would then want to put into a written document. So we have had those engagements as a parliamentary unit sitting here in Cape Town and giving some of the engagements across the provinces. The Victims Charter, we are almost done as far as we went back just to audit and see how far the departments are in as far as some of these activities are concerned or the obligations that are contained in the Victims Charter. And I think as we are doing this work, I think one of the things that we will probably have to engage with the Department of Justice on once this work is finalized is the fact that we do see that there's a lot that has been done, but perhaps it's time that as government also sort of consolidate a lot of processes that they've put in place. Because many a times we find that there is something that has been done, yes, but somebody was not necessarily saying, I'm waiting, the victim's charter is wrong. So we will be engaging with government and relevant departments on that just to see what is it that could be done to ensure that we just consolidate some of these things so that we don't have a lot of policy processes lying around. We just need to consolidate that. So we will share the report right at the end. They have started the department with writing that specific report. Gender barometer. As we highlighted the last time, we are still engaging with mining houses and looking into issues around gender mainstreaming as far as that is concerned. In the previous quarter, we had visited quite a number of mines, and we had then also gotten a lot of data. So they are currently also doing their write-up as far as that process is concerned. And it does appear that we still have compliance issues now as we are doing our preliminary report writing on some of the, the assessment is indicating that we still have specific issues. And I think that the mining houses also, they sort of are not coming to the party. So I think a lot of work still needs to be done so that people... Because when we're engaging on issues of gender mainstreaming, we take into account, yes, that there may be challenges, but it makes the work much easier if people are also coming to the party in terms of what are the issues that they have, what is it that they've tried to put in place, and then we really talk from that level, other than trying to be a little bit more defensive on some of these things. The GBV, we are also finalizing our write-up on that. We have got a wealth of information as far as that is concerned. And like I said in the last quarter, I mean, one of the biggest things that we are trying to do or put together is also to have an engagement on some of these things, just to say, where are we? Because we are aware that DSD in this current report that's going to come out seems to be really doing a lot of work, but we still need to have that direction as to whether are they now going to be a coordinating body as far as that is concerned, and then see how we can take that forward. Court monitoring, we still continue to monitor a number of cases. In the provinces, and over and above that, there are also some questionnaires that we put forward in the various courts. So in some instances, we have had to sort of engage with the court manager where we could see that some of the information that we requested was not coming forth. But as usual, we will have a consolidated report at the end of the financial year that looks into all the court monitoring process, and then we will then be engaging with the Justice Department just to check how far they are. I like to them what are the problems that we are seeing on the ground, and hopefully they can then take that forward and see what it is that they can do to ensure that they can block some of the blockages that we find on the ground with some of these things. Policy dialogues, we did not hold policy dialogues in the current reporting period, and I think that's one of the activities that are a little behind as far as the work of the Commission is concerned. We have a policy brief, we put the policy brief there for members as well. But what we still need to do is just to ensure that we still find space to engage with the different policymakers. We have been engaging with GCIS just to help us get to the proper fora of where we can really find these policymakers, because I think the difficulty here is we do depend on somebody, as they call their meetings, that you also get to have an audience. And so we are really now trying to scout and see hopefully that we can be able to then find an audience in the current quarter, which will be the fourth quarter. As far as employment equity hearings is concerned, I spoke a little bit when I did our the overview or the introduction, where I highlighted the work that we are doing, and specifically the red card and green card campaign, which we are launching now. And gender transformation hearings as well took place where we were engaging, we are still continuing to engage with the universities, and this time around November period, we also engaged with the University of Pretoria, TUT, and the Northwest University. And we are currently trying to analyze the information that we then received so that we can come up with a report that gives them specific recommendations, and then we can then engage going forward with them on those recommendations. Research reports and the assessment on political parties. This year, as we indicated, we will be looking into the elections as usual, and we are in Kofi tomorrow, so we are going to be observing there. We are piloting our tool as well, so we will be, the team is leaving Joburg today to the northwest to then ensure that we then observe Kofi as well. Moving on to strategic objective 2, which really is the protect and promote strategic objective, where we really engage with relevant stakeholders and do our education and raise and awareness on issues of gender equality. There are quite a number of things that we do under that. This is where really our legal work as far as complaints is concerned resides. And further, this is where public education and information work also is housed. For the period, the legal department has been able to get 258 new complaints. For the actual requirement, I think for on a quarterly basis, we are sitting at 180, but at this particular stage, if you look at where we've been throughout the quarters, the annual target of 900 has been exceeded, and we are sitting at 922 files currently. For the reporting period as well, with collaboration with our Public Education and Information Unit, we have conducted 36 outreach and legal clinics, and we do note that there has been a slight decrease on the clinics that we've done, but when you look overall, because we have been exceeding targets dramatically over the quarters, we have already reached that particular target. slide just to give members a sense of how the 258 that I spoke to is looking like, the numbers, and also that is also visualized in terms of some graphs, just to give us a sense of who's high ranking in terms of opening of some of these files. And when we open these files, I must say, we see also the fact that as we do our work, as we engage on community radio stations, we also sort of get a lot of cases. We concentrated further quarter in Limpopo for this past quarter, and we were really looking into, you know, the maintenance act and all the changes and all that. And I think we saw that sort of bearing fruit, and we've got quite a number of maintenance cases that are coming out specifically from Limpopo. The slide that just gives us a sense of where we were in the last quarter. We started the quarter with about 525 files, and as indicated, we opened 258, and we then have been in a position to close 305, which means we are going to then start the fourth quarter with 478. And this also just sort of depicts or gives members a colorful highlight in terms of how we've been faring in terms of closing the files over the quarters and opening the files, how we've been faring. And as I indicated, I think when you look at the number of complaints that are high, we do see issues around domestic violence, and possibly we always say that if you look, even the media during the 16 days, they sort of try and really just look into that. So we do see those numbers also coming up, and it actually shows that if we could encourage the media as well, that as they report on some of these things, they don't do it just concentrating on specific dates. I think it would be a helpful process, because we do see some of these things coming up during this first time. I spoke to the maintenance issues in terms of Limpopo and the like. You know, we still have those specific areas where we find that people do need help and do need engagement with the commission, and we are still looking at how best we can ensure that not all the time, but every now and again, in those communities where people are not there, that we then also take our services to them even on Saturdays. So it's one of the things we've seen, that especially with farming communities, that farming communities during the week, they are not there, and they are not able, even though we go to a specific community, they are not able to come and engage with us. So one of the things that we are really looking into as we are planning is to have, you know, one or two activities, and obviously what we will then be pushing for is to ensure that then people get time. Perhaps in the week, if you've worked on a Saturday and you've done a legal clinic, then perhaps we can have a concession where you can take a day off in the week on some of those things, but just to ensure that we reach some of those communities that we've highlighted as having problems. Any child marriages, we're still seeing these coming up, and specifically in Limpopo, some of the issues that are really coming out is the fact that I think community members do see some of these kids that are getting married off, but there seems to be a reluctance now of whistleblowing and highlighting some of these issues, because then people are afraid they get ostracized in their communities, because you need to then continue to engage with police and the like on some of these issues. So we're still trying to sort of see what is it that you could be put in place to be engaging with the relevant parties within the legal system, just to see what is it that could be put in place, because communities are important for these things, and we can't also make them sort of feel that they will be out there and there will be issues around they don't, if they report that, they may just fall into the trap. To highlight that as far as we have spoken to legal clinics and the fact that we have had now a total of 128 outreach and legal clinics in this financial year, and that has already, you know, exceeded some of our targets as far as the 90 is concerned. And we are really not worried, because as we do some of these activities, we also do not necessarily have a lot of expenditure that's attached to it. And it's really an activity that allows us to have far more reach. And so we do get excited if we are able to have a far more reach as we go. And in the next financial year, it's one of the activities that we'll also look into, ensuring that is also sort of heightened up. And if you look at the, we also try and look at the correlation between you know, having legal clinics and the kind of files or the number of files that we open. And for this period, we just highlighted the numbers there to say throughout with the legal clinics that we've held, we are having a number that is actually increasing. I know that previously, I mean, we used to have zeros everywhere or one at least and what have you, but you can certainly see an improvement on some of those processes. Strategic objective two, as far as the systematic investigations are concerned, transformation in the judiciary. We spoke about this in the previous quarter. The fact that we have finalized our draft report, we have given it to several stakeholders, concerned stakeholders, Department of Justice, Presidency, and the Chief Justice's Office. And we have had responses from the other offices, but the Chief Justice's office has requested a further extension. We have given them an extension up until December, and now they have requested a further extension, indicating that they would still want to have an engagement at JSC on this particular report, and the indication is that they will probably come back to us April, May 2016, which means we will have to carry over this particular activity into the next financial year just to hear them out in terms of what it is that they want to put on the table as far as that work is concerned. Decriminalization of sex work, we have it's a two-pronged process, where we had a specific report or specific complaint around the fact that the SAPS were abusing state sex workers, and where they've been engaging with SAPS. They have given us their responses on some of the issues that were put forward. We have analyzed some of those, and we still feel that we need further information. So the team that's working there has further engaged. We do see they have, you know, highlighted that they have done some sort of training as well on some of their processes as a way to curb these abuses. But we still are still further engaging and needing further information before we conclude. As far as the South African law reform leg is concerned, we are still awaiting the paper to come out. On this particular issue. So once it's out, then we will all be in a position to engage and comment. Maternal health, the investigation is also still underway, and we have now received responses. Initially, we had not received responses as yet from the National Department of Health, and we've received some responses from them. And we are now currently trying to assess those and see whether we are in a position to then conclude. Our coordinated program, the one that is looking into women's economic empowerment, we've had quite a number of processes across all the provinces. And there are quite a number of key issues that are coming up with this particular process. Normally when we highlight key issues, then what we then do in the next quarter the students club those key issues and see which specific departments can then, you know, engage on some of those things. We, the last time we were engaging with small business because quite a number of issues were coming out around a small business, and it therefore goes with some of the key issues that we have highlighted that have come forward. We will then also be engaging with all the relevant departments just to see what they could do or take forward as far as some of these things are concerned. We will be undertaking our human rights campaign that's going to take place now in March, and really for the third quarter it was just all about ensuring that we are then ready to have specific programs that we'll be running with and that we have now put together. A community radio program is now in place and that has been finalized, so we'll be running with that now during March. That's just to highlight, because I think members initially requested that we give them a sense of you know, how many people we are able to reach. So this is just coming out specifically of the activities or the dialogues that we've been having in various provinces, and we've just tried to highlight in terms of male or female, where we have been able to reach. And I had attached to the slide a specific web document. I'm hoping that it will be able to open. But there's a web document that I've also attached that shows the actual reach, where we have been able to reach. We are doing that as well on the basis of the request that we have had from the committee. I see that technology is just not helping me out yet. And so we have that particular a geographic area just to highlight what we have reached. As far as communications is concerned, I must indicate that as we were quite happy even in this particular quarter in terms of the work that we have done. We have been able to do quite a number of processes. We have had partnerships in the period with MINISA, SABC, GCIS, and some of the community television stations this time around. Because we normally talk about community radio stations, but we've also had quite a relationship during this period with community television stations, where we were really ensuring that some of our 16 days campaigns and issues are highlighted. The media campaign that was running during this period took place through social media and the community television and radio PSAs, like adverts on the radio as well, on community radio. And for this media campaign, the SABC really availed free airtime for us. And NEMISA, as a training institution, a production house of sorts, they gave us some resources. We had an engagement with their CEO there, and they gave us some resources where we then did some adverts which we are going to be slicing on SABC. And we also did a documentary with them, which documentary was then taking place on the community television. We also worked very closely with GCIS to roll out a viral campaign which aims to educate the public and remind various stakeholders about solutions that are at their disposal to deal with issues around sexual violence and rape. And this was done through the hashtag DidYouKnow. I spoke about the three-part documentary that we produced in collaboration with UNISA, and it was earmarked for community television and those episodes have been running, and we are quite excited because the further highlighted that they think that some of the documentary, some of the parts, because it was a three-part, some they think it would still be relevant to be flighting now during Human Rights Month in March. So that means already we have that process that will be running. I've just tried to highlight just by way of to highlight the sketches and the social media coverage and all that. And it's a pity that our technology is also a little bit problematic. I won't try and do it again, but we hope that we'll be able to play you a PSA so you will see what is it that we're talking about when we're saying that we've also put a PSA together, but I will not even go there. Provincially, I think just to sum up, you know, when it comes to issues around social media, you know, you can see that most of the interaction of social media took place on Twitter, which is a relevant platform for immediate responses to the issues mentioned about CG and the programs that CG is running. The second highest number, if you look into those graphs, colorful graphs that I've put, is number of interactions that also took place on Facebook. The highest number of coverage on social media really took place around 28 December or so. And it so coincidentally also happened that at that particular time there were specific appearances that the chairperson was doing on some radio stations in terms of some of the discussions on the programs that we are undertaking. And more coverage, which is slightly a little bit lower than what we could see during 28 November, took place on 7 and 8 December. And as well, this is where we were live on Morning Live at the Institute, where we were engaged in that TNA business, where we were giving a platform to also appear or have engagement together with the Minister for Women. Provincial, we still see some of those issues. It's normally intertwined with you know, activities that we undertake under strategic objectives three as far as public education is concerned. And we still had quite a number of themes that are coming out in terms of the deliberations that were taking place in provinces, issues around LGBTI, women empowerment. These issues really help us as a commission to then say what kind of programs should we be targeting in the next financial year as well. So we always look at them. One, it helps us to engage with the relevant departments so that they can see that what are the shortcomings of some of their processes on the ground. But secondly, it also helps us to then give us a sense of what is it that we must be doing in terms of taking that way forward. And we always try and highlight some of the areas that we have reached as well from provincial perspective, so that slide speaks to that. And I think, you know, some of the issues and some of the problems that they are having, I think I highlighted in Mpumalanga as far as child marriage issues are concerned. And during this particular time as well, that's when the Eastern Cape also had their own breakout on attacks on foreign nationals. We have a separate report that we have done as the commission as well, and we are including it together with the KZ one that we undertook previously. Strategic Objective 3, this is where we are having our assessment reports. We still continue to engage with quite a number of institutions, and we have now put together a booklet that also simplifies CEDAW, because one of the things that we've seen is some of these instruments are important, but it makes it easier if people are in the communities and on the ground understand them. You simplify it in terms of how practical, you try and practicalize it so that, you know, people see how that is still relevant to them in terms of the things that they do also on the ground and issues that they may have. AGDI, we indicated in the last quarter that we finalized the draft. We've given it to UNECA in Addis for review. We received last week some of their comments on the report, so we'll then be tightening that report. As I indicated, this is the report that will be giving us a full status of where we are as far as gender equality is concerned as a country, looking from quantitative and qualitative view. So we are quite happy that it's one of the reports that we'll have to extensively really engage on once it's been finalized. And attendance as far as the international and regional events are concerned, we were invited by the Minister of Women to go together with them when they were attending the AU Gender Pre-Summit on African Year of Human Rights, and with particular focus on the rights of women. And we have a report that is also lodged with this Parliament on those specific things. Under this specific objective, the only thing that is still outstanding is us looking into the Fido country report, you know, just from an independent lens, to then see how whether it mirrors some of the things that we also found on the ground when we did our own primary CEDAW report. We've also tried to put together a full APP, the table. I'm not going to open it up here because before it does scramble like it did previously, but we have a specific table that was also forwarded that looks into, it's just the what I've been mentioning, but it depicts it as it is found in the APP, and then we are giving progress on that just to make it easier for members to also see what we are talking about in the slides. I will then move on quickly just to cover what we felt, you know, we've analyzed SONA as we normally do every year. And basically in our analysis, I think the Commission welcomes the President's presentation on SONA for 2016 and its focus, which on some of the key challenges, particularly, you know, issues around service delivery, economic and financial challenges that the country is facing currently. We do, however, note that his speech was largely lacked a gendered lens and focus, whilst in its thrust it was mainly looking into the economic and financial challenges currently facing the country, and emphasis on the need for cost-cutting and fiscal prudence to avoid a possible financial crisis. However, CD believes strongly that it is during times of economic challenges that a stronger focus on gender equality and transformation is particularly necessary, because we know that this women really bear the brunt of some of these things. While acknowledging that the country faces great challenges currently and that these challenges would need effective policy responses and interventions from government and other key stakeholders, we also believe that gender equality and gender transformation also remain agent challenges facing the country, and it really should be a key imperative that we should be looking into as a country. We noted a number of key issues raised in the speech with potentially positive implications for promoting gender equality and mainstreaming, as well as important omissions and or missed opportunities from a gender perspective. So as much as, you know, we looked into the speech, we also took into account to say, you know, there might just be some indirect things that also, you know, may change lives of women and all that. So we really looked through using that lens as well. CD welcomes the President's statement that economic transformation remains a key priority for government and that economic transformation should include women. However, CD would like to see more detail and concrete steps in this regard, especially through the specific programs and strategies of key ministries such as the Department of Economic Development, Public Works, Trade and Industry, Land Affairs and Rural Development. To prioritize a gender balanced approach to economic transformation. And therefore, on that basis, we really urge, specific departments and governments to ensure that the forthcoming budget empowers women's empowerment. So we are really hoping that as the budget speech comes forward, it will also sort of give us a little bit of clarity and steps and exactly what would be done as far as women's economic empowerment is concerned. So that's what we are looking up to as Thursday, I think. CGE urges that as part of economic transformation, government needs to focus attention on women's contribution to the country's GDP, including women's care work. This should also take into account the impact of the weaker rand as well as inflation on women. The President stated that government intended to revitalize agriculture coupled with land reform programs. We suppose we are talking about the reopening the land claim process for those who missed the opportunity in 1999. Government envisages that this would empower women including through the government's 50-50 land policy framework for people living in the farms. CGE's research work, the previous research work on land reform and the like, we found that the land reform program has so far benefited mainly men, whilst women remain marginalized from land reform. And therefore, we look forward to relevant departments and land reform institutions providing greater details in terms of how this new process will address the need for greater gender balance in the state's land reform program. So as much as we hear the land reform is coming up, we do feel that there must be greater detail, and there's a lot of work that has been done by CG and other entities as far as looking into this particular issue should be taken into account by the various departments. The speech identified a set of socio-economic policy measures such as the release of the National Health Insurance White Paper, NHI, the government's comprehensive social security plan and the ongoing national minimum wage public policy discussions. And the latter is particularly important given that women tend to be overrepresented in low paid employment. CG wishes to express its support for the government's continued provision of social grants as part of its important social policy measures. These are potentially important policy initiatives likely to make an impact on the lives of women. These initiatives are also likely to hold potentially positive implications for women in rural areas where very low wages and high level of unemployment is predominant. And primarily, health care services and facilities are solely inadequate. In addition, it has been established that more female-headed households in South Africa are at greater risk of falling into poverty compared to male-headed households. CGE therefore also, even in this regard, awaits further or greater detail to be released in terms of specific measures and interventions to ensure greater benefits for women in many impoverished communities across the country. The government's initiative to support black industrialists, on the face of it, the scheme seems extremely important in terms of promoting economic amongst the formerly economically disempowered groups by addressing the historically and racially skewed ownership and control of the country's industrial productive capacity resources. And CGE would be keen to see, you know, further development of the scheme and the implementation and or rolling out plans to ensure that they address issues of gender equality and transformation, ensuring that women are not excluded from these beneficiaries of schemes. Similarly, the President's acknowledgement during SONA of the crucial role of large-scale development financing institutions such as DBSA and IDC in financing economic development activities in the country, particularly in the agricultural sector, is important as it places emphasis on the importance of the country's financial services institutions for long-term economic development and transformation. However, such an announcement should be made accompanied by a formal policy statement or initiative on how government intends to bring gender equality and balance in the area of accessing development finance in the country. Women continue to face intractable constraints in accessing financial services and support for their economic activities. We believe as a commission that development finance institutions such as DBSA and IDC should provide financing support that places women entrepreneurs at the forefront of their development financing policies and programs, particularly giving women limited access to private sector financial services products. Where possible, we also urge governments to ensure that public sector development finance institutions provided specifically ring-fenced, you know, financial support services to women entrepreneurs. The President announced that the South African National AIDS Council, SANEC, was now functioning again and that it would revive national campaigns against HIV. CGA believes that this announcement should have been made in the context of a comprehensive national campaign which places greater emphasis on women's reproductive rights, including a focus on young women between 15 and 24 years of age who tend to be at greater risk of HIV/AIDS infection. This group should therefore be prioritized in these planned campaigns. Many young women, especially from unemployed and poverty-stricken campaigns, tend to have limited economic and empowerment opportunities, often having to rely on older men for financial support, which often leads to exploitation, including risky sexual behavior. A comprehensive response is really therefore critical. The Commission notes with concern that the President did not refer in his speech to the fact that South Africa was due to support its to submit its country report on CEDAW Committee in 2015, which obviously didn't happen previously and has yet to be done this year. In addition to the country not meeting the 50-50 target for women's representation in terms of the SADC protocol. So all that we are saying there is there are also important international instruments that we have signatory to, and we would have liked just to see obviously a snippet of that in there, especially when there are big issues that we will be putting forward. Finally, the President alluded to forthcoming local government elections expected to be held sometime between May and August this year. This is an area of women participation and representation in governance. The CGE is monitoring closely, and like we indicated, that's what we are going to be doing. We have been doing over the years, and we have consistently revealed and exposed the level of underrepresentation for women in these areas. And we really would have liked to hear the President place some sort of emphasis on the importance of increasing women's participation and representation in order to influence methods of governance, policy making, and planning of service delivery to their communities throughout the country. So we just feel that that's also an opportunity need as we are talking about the election. It would have been important to also highlight that. Chair, just give an indication of the work that we did as the Commission for the third quarter, and obviously also taking into account the sauna that would that be under two. And I normally write at the end, always try and highlight, and I have submitted a much thicker a presentation that takes members to the specific activities that each and every commissioner in the commission undertook during this time. And I think of importance, you will all see most of our governance or oversight committees have been able to take place. So all the committees that play oversight on the ACP have been able to sit and ensure that, you know, some of the targets that's contained in the ACP are able to meet, we are able to then meet them as the secretariat. And we have also highlighted quite a number of forums where different commissioners have been able to attend and make representations and engagements on various issues, whether it's issues around gender-based violence, whether it's issues around transformation. So we've had quite a number of dialogues that we have attended and looked into. We had the special rapporteur on violence against women coming during this particular time as well. And we hosted her as the CGE, and we had also a panel of commissioners engaging with her, but as well we had also ensured that we also get you know, some of the Chapter 9 institutions to also be part of that dialogue, where we called in the CRL Commission, for instance, the South African Human Rights Commission, and the Public Protector to just have engagements or be party to those engagements with the special rapporteur. And we've been doing quite a lot of work around disability as well. I mean, well, we know that it falls extensively within the South African Human Rights Commission, but they've been working very closely with us, taking into account that, you know, issues of disability and, you know, issues of women, I mean, those are really the marginalized, and therefore we really try as far as possible to ensure that we work together on some of these things. We are currently having a specific training session where we are training some of the other Chapter 9s as well, which is funded by the Office of the Human Rights Commissioner seated in Cape Town on issues of disability. We have quite a number of policies that have just come out on disability, and it is quite important that all of us are aware in terms of what are the things that we need to put in place. So we had the Deputy Chairperson helping us and leading that particular a process for us. So I think, Chair, I'm not really going to be going through each and every commissioner's activity, but those are, in a nutshell, you know, some of the things that we've been doing. We still continue to engage, really, on issues of land and our campaign that we are pushing, so that everybody buys into it. And we've had quite a number of engagements between commissioners and some of the traditional leaders in various provinces. So I think that, in a nutshell, Chair, sort of by way of trying to summarize some of the work that commissioners have also done for this quarter, and that is also contained in the slide form that was also submitted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Continue.
Permission to take from the committee. I'm not sure it will allow us to continue the finances and then we have a
discussion.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, the House of Lords. The presentation basically deals with financial spending of the Commission in relation to the substantive report that the CEO presented earlier on.
basically it will contain information around financial performance and budget management, financial position of the institution as at the end of December 2016, cash flow management methods, and as well we attempt to provide some analytical analysis for management accounts, expenditure generally, and we'll touch on issues relating to corporate services, risk management, and other CSMA related methods. The results basically focuses on the third quarter, but we'll bring in context to deal with cumulative spending for the period starting from the beginning of April 2015 up to the end of December 2015. That is a non-month period. For the quarter, third quarter in isolation, on this slide you can see that total income received amounted to 17 million. It was a similar level to the previous year, 17 million. Total expenditure stood at 16.6 million. And for the quarter in isolation, we are reporting a surplus, net surplus of a million. We are also indicating that when one looks into the income comparing the previous financial year, same period, 9 months period, and the current year for 9 months period, we see that our transfers from the fiscus remain pretty much the same at 16.9 million. There's just been a marginal increase of 1%. We know that there have been budgetary reductions announced by the minister in October of 2014, and that has impacted our budget. Other income pre-comparatives, in the current period we have recorded 600,000 as donation in kind by the SADC for our 16 days campaign. Last year we didn't record it, and the other component is that 724,000 would be interest income because we are still having some cash balances in the bank account. Expenditure also remains comparatively the same. What we can note is that aggregated operating expenditure, last year the time around we spent 5 million and current year we spent 4.1 million. What explains the difference is basically the fact that we have now instituted cost containment measures, and as a result there are efficiency gains, mainly from travel and related, as well inclusive of the fact that we are now taking innovative approach in delivering services. On personal expenditure, comparing the two periods, we know that what explains the difference is certain increase, comparative increase, can be attributed to the general salary increases that were effected 1 April 2015. It's a year easy. Another point to note in comparing the numbers, you know that last year under finance costs, we paid some 1.8 million to SARS. It was a once-off incident dealing with a previous non-compliance. So that that particular expenditure won't be repeated because we have taken up corrective measures. And that basically, in essence, accounts to the deficit that has been indicated in the previous period. Summary, I think these are the certain points summarizing the expenditure for the quarter, beginning October to end of December. We are reporting a surplus, as the other thing has been mentioned before, and our anticipation is that we will spend within the budget even in the succeeding quarter. Just to provide context, this is the cumulative expenditure, income and expenditure report. We are reporting a net surplus of 876,000 if you look at the bottom line. That is for the 9 months period. Last year, we at the same time we reported 1.8 million. But as you can see, I mean, the key contributor there is the payment on finance costs, the payment that I've made reference to. I'm basically repeating the same rendition of earlier, the quota expenditure. We are spending overall within the allocated means. Our expenditure are comparable between the financial years. As you can see from the graph, the 2014 figures are indicated in red, and then the current year are indicated in blue. You can see that our results are basically very much comparable, despite the fact that there's inflation and the like, but we're still spending the same amount, 50 million for 9 months, and basically it's also an attestation for the efficiency gains that we have been citing has been the key drivers of enablers that makes us to be able to, despite the fact that the allocation has been reduced, that we still can do more work with less. And summarizing narratively, there are the figures. Our allocation, we have received a fair share of the allocation, 69 million, which has been allocated for the full financial year. National Treasury has transferred about 50 million, and that amounts to 75%, basically 9 months over 12 months. So it's a fair share. And then in addition, we have some contributions. I think of significant is a contribution in kind for this particular period by the SABC, the 18 airtime. And our projection basically is that we will spend within the budget. We don't anticipate any material deviation from the allocation or from the plan. Giving further information, this is that you analyze expenditure. Takeaway from this particular slide is that we're spending 56% of what has been allocated on the core service delivery matters, mainly issues around the APP, and like we normally put it before the committee and everybody else, to say that our mandate, to deliver the mandate, we are utilizing human resources in the main, as opposed to using service providers to do our core work. We are using our own internal human capital, and as a result, you will also know that when we are breaking down the expenditure for service providers, we see that a key component will be compensation of employees. And then from this particular slide, one can see that the overall spending for 9 months was 61 million, of which 36 million was for COE, compensation of employees, and 9%, if you look into the blue block at the bottom, 9% of would be coming, would be the office running expenditure. As you know, we've got 9 provincial offices and head office in Johannesburg. And as a result, we have some office overhead, telephones to pay, and similar office expenses. And the remaining 20% relates to activities that were directly identified in the APT cost service device. And still analyzing the same information, but this time around, providing it in terms of economic classification, and also giving the information in terms of the location between provincial offices and head office. One can really see that, and that's when I think the analytics provides the average expenditure per headcount, per personnel. The commission, over this period, the average employee number was 101, that includes commissioners. One can see that the cost paid on compensation of employees was 362,000 for the 9 month period. The statistics are basically been given there. What can be taken from this particular slide is that 33% of expenditure is expenditure that has been incurred in provinces, the nine provinces, 16.5 million if you look into the bottom block, provincial offices. And as well, I think further drilling into these numbers, one will also extrapolate that it takes a monthly average of 203,000 per province to operate a province, of which 167,000 basically is for remuneration for the foot soldiers who are doing the course service delivery work. And in contrast to head office, where a large percentage is spent on compensation of employees. In provinces, personnel are basically focused directly on cost of delivery. And further rendition is analysis on expenditure and strategic objectives. We will see that for strategic objective one, which is basically focusing on creating an enabling legislative environment, we're spending within the allocation. So far into the financial year, we have spent 72% of the planned budget, and that is pretty much consistent with the plan. There aren't any material spending on this particular expenditure. Of note is the fact that we have spent, if one looks into the sub-strategy number 3, to conduct performance assessment of political parties and the like, is higher. And some of the key drivers in those particular type of expenditure is that there's been a specific litigation case for which we have spent an unplanned portion of around 350,000, but moving along basically because we are just giving the analysis of how the spending has been spread against the APP activities. We can move along and then look into the next one. This one is where we are spending within the allocated budget at 79% of the original allocation. And as you can note, I think this is a very activity-intensive strategic objective, in that it is a strategic objective where we are doing workshops, where we are doing legal cleaning and the like, and then the strategic objective that involves spending such as spending on travel and related things. But the takeaway is that we are spending according to the plan. There aren't any material deviation. We are happy about the spending levels or challenges. Strategic objective number 3, which deals with the international scrutiny instruments. The activities on this particular strategic objective are not evenly spread through the financial year. Activities are normally saturated in the fourth quarter. Hence, you see that our expenditure today stood at 58%, while the general expenditure rate is at 75% about. So we, there are activities that are being conducted now. One of the identified activities that explains the under expenditure just for the period is some slight delays on the ADDI project. I think in terms of the APP and the budget, it was meant to be completed quite earlier. However, due to unforeseen circumstances, there have been spending less, but the activity and the spending will catch up as we are moving towards the end of the financial year. So we are anticipating that the high-end activities will take place, and correspondingly, expenditure will catch up. And everything will be completed according to plan, and the expenditure will track that as well. The first strategic objective is the internally looking one for the efficient and effective administration. We know basically that as well, spending is within the allocation. And we are also noting instances at which there have been some slight deviations from IT and HR. The next component of this report is on financial position. We are indicating that overall, if one looks into the extreme right block, we will see that we are still, in terms of liquidity, having sufficient cash to service our obligations, our liabilities. Although one can also see, if one looks into the ratios, that we were much more liquid last year compared to now. We had more cash than we have had of liabilities. Last year we had 9% more. This year we are lacking basically at 85 about current ratio and cash ratio. The other measurement in the middle block is about how long it takes. We know that government policy is to pay service providers within 30 days. So we have done the calculation, the average days it takes to honor obligations to pay invoices. Last year we were doing relatively badly, but still within the norm of 30% or the prescription of 30 days. This time around we are paying our creditors much more quicker than 17 days turnaround. As well, the health of the institution measured by solvency is that we are still solvent. We still have got more assets than we have liabilities. So our assumption that we are a going concern is still valid. We are a sound and healthy operating institution. Cash flows. Basically, cash inflows are in the main derived from allocations from National Treasury. The breakdowns have been given, around 50 million or so is received directly from National Treasury, and we're spending around the same amount of allocation. To be specific, for the period up to the end of December, we spent 52.8 million, basically, largely as payment to employees and suppliers. And the cash flow statement basically says that our operating activities are sufficiently funded. But in addition, part of the cash outflows apart from operating activities, includes investing activities. In this period, over the period of 12 to 18 months, one can see that if you look into purchase of property, plant and equipment, you see that combined through the period of 12 to 18 months, the commission has spent around 7 million in investing in property and equipment. We have purchased vehicles, we have also purchased IT equipment, and over this period, the amount of money that we have spent, we have reported on this activity. Overall, comparing the two periods, in 2014, we had cash balances of 12 million. By the end of December 2015, we had around 8.1 million. So our cash resources are going down comparatively speaking. But as we have mentioned before, we are still liquid, we are still able to meet our liabilities, service our obligations. Other matters relate to corporate services, supply chain. We know that it's a regulated environment. I will take you through some of the components of supply chain, which also will include that fleet and facilities management, and so office accommodation. Just to note, there are some of the activities that have been undertaken under demand management. National Treasury have issued a circular in which entities, TFMA regulated entities, will be required to utilize centralized supply database effective from the new financial year. Currently, during the fourth quarter, we'll be working through transitional activities which have been spelled out in this particular circular. So that's basically to note some of the activities. And as well, I think as we are looking forward into the new year, there are plans and discussions at hand at the Commission to really take our public education and information department as one of the lead outreach entities. And then as part of demand management, we are already planning around getting training manuals developed and the like. The CEO has also mentioned the fact that amongst other things, we need to develop a CEDO manual, but the Commission also intends to have a manual that could be used by the CGE basically to do outreach work, but as well to also empower the institution to even train other CSOs and organizations that are dealing operating within the sector. It's a key demand management sector. Some of the things are basically regular things that they want to be doing as just being included just to track activities. Acquisition management is an element in SCM. The big acquisition in this period was for the new travel agency appointed. The new contract has been effective from the 1st of January. The old one lasts. So we have had so far a good transition. And emphasis around procurement and acquisition is that there aren't any deviations from the prescripts, so we have not recorded any irregular expenditure whatsoever for the full 9 month period. And that also talks to, you know, audit issues, because there have been audit issues dealing with irregular expenditure. So far we are happy as a Commission that we have not identified any irregular expenditure. Other component of SCM is performance management, by and large contract management. The prescripts require that we do regular, at a minimum quarterly review of the contract register. We have done that in the period. And one of the products of effective performance management or contract management is the ability to identify where suppliers falter. The second bullet is just an example to say that despite the fact that there was a contract in existence, an offer being accepted on a particular date, we had to cancel basically because our take is that because the service provider could no longer fulfill the performance obligations, we canceled it. Just to emphasize that performance management exists within the CGE as part of other elements. We report basically in this particular thing because supply chain has got the formal layout of supply chain includes this particular function, disposal management. We have also reported before that the Commission, as we are investing or replacing old assets, there will be a need to dispose of the old assets. So we have been having assets that have been obsolete, assets that have been redundant because they are no longer in use, and we have a process of disposing those. Our disposal process, which we anticipate to finalize within the fourth quarter, includes selling off scrap items, It's a phase that we have already begun and started, and we're anticipating to finalize that by the 29th of February. The second phase deals with the replaced IT, old IT equipment, which are still usable in terms of federal regulations and also consistent with the CGE policy of disposal, for disposal. We can donate this equipment of IT nature to institutions of learning. We are, that's the second phase that we are dealing with, and there are also plans in place to say that by the first week of March, those disposals, those donations shall have been executed. So we are running those particular processes. Another element in supply chain is logistics management. Dealing with fleet management, we have provided information around the use of our fleet. We have a fleet of 22 vehicles. Each provincial office has got two vehicles, and the remaining number will be in at their office. So we are having a fleet management function within the institution, and part of just to indicate the instances at which the Commission deals with the consequence management. We have in those particular issues that we have highlighted, but we are effecting consequence management. And as well, I mean, just to get things working properly, we are procuring an efficient tracking management system. Those are just pointers. Here on this particular slide, we are indicating the expenditure per vehicle, per province, averaging. What we can take is that we are operating per province. It costs around 5,400 per quarter to operate a vehicle on average. I think we are still very much efficient. We are using our fleet much more. If you can see that over the 3 months period, overall CGE fleet has cost under 120,000, operating 22 vehicles. So there are indeed quite a lot of efficiency gains, and then there's also an effective oversight on the use of vehicles. And we are basically transparent about how much it costs. And that attests to the fact that we are cost effective in utilizing our fleet. Some of the things relating to financial management and TFMA is the fact that the fourth quarter is a quarter that coincides with reporting and auditing. So the Commission in the fourth quarter will be dealing with the preparation of AFS and even the final report for submission by the end of May. Those are TFMA mandatory dates. As well, there are arrangements already in place for the AG to commence with the regularity audit, effective from the 2nd of May. There is 2 months down the line. And there are such agreements. I think oversight is happening. All the committee has been involved. So we'll be checking those, some of the critical things. We know that federal regulations, specifically section 27 of the regulation, requires the presence or the that an entity ought to have an internal audit function. We have one. Part of the activities on internal audit is to do with the audit of IS, meaning information systems. Currently, we're having an outside company doing that. That was also sanctioned by our audit committee, and it is anticipated that by the end of February, this audit will be completed. It's a critical audit because we have changed our information system environment, and that's a rather indicator here because in our audit committee, in terms of the Public Audit Act, the AG ought to be present in every meeting, and in our audit committee meeting, the AG is regularly present. And because, as we have mentioned, there will be a regularity audit by the AG. However, there are indications that in the interest of saving costs and money and time and effort, there's a condition to say that the AG might put reliance on this particular audit. So it is highlighted as a critical audit. So it's just a rather that has been put on there. And the other issue that we'd like to bring to the attention of the committee is on audit action plans. There have been audit issues identified from the past audit by the Auditor General, and then key focus areas were SCM, ICT, human resource performance, information, financial statement, and general internal controls. We have made, we have provided a schedule of action plans in much more detail, details giving specific actions that need to be taken, and the timelines and responsible officials to execute those particular, and progress as well has been indicated in that particular attachment. It's a separate attachment, and on this particular attachment, our own internal audit have done an independent assurance, basically for those who are tasked with assurance, meaning commissioners, commissioner oversight committees, the office of the CEO, as to what management are saying and progress made on the implementation of the action plan, whether that is correct or not. So there are comments on the extreme. I'm talking about this attachment. There are comments on the extreme right of this particular web document to say, and those comments are comments by the internal audit to say they are satisfied or they are not satisfied that the actions have been executed as planned. And in summary, having looked into that detailed action plans, by the end of December, we were 80% complete, or 85% of the actions that have been identified were completed. Of the 53 audit issues, 45 have been completed, and then the spread of those issues has been summarized in terms of focus areas. So effectively, every specific issue has been given attended to and resolved, and where there's a need to improve on control systems. So we have improved the internal control, we have instituted systems to ensure that there's no recurrence of similar issues. So from where we sit, we are content that our commitment to deal with this particular issues bears fruit. We are not anticipating that there will be further issues. Having resolved this particular issue, we don't anticipate recurrence or negative impact of on the audit outcomes. We are anticipating that we have implemented the recommendations quite effectively. One other area regulated by CSMA under Section 38 is risk management. We do have a system of risk management and as a condition. And basically, as part of the activities for risk management, we identify risk, assess the impact of that particular risk on the operations of the entity, and then where there are shortcomings, we identify the risk treatment plans, and those particular risk action plans are being implemented and subjected to oversight, regular oversight by commissioners, by even the risk management committee. So we are basically highlighting some of the issues, the activities that have been done. We know that we have now invested in the new IT servers and the like. Part of the highly identified risk areas where the physical security for the servers, and then in this particular quarter, this is what we have done. We have ensured that there's lock and key, proper lock and key through biometrics. system where the server is against the peril of fire and the like. We've got smoke detectors and alarm. So we have basically heightened physical security to ensure that we are also compliant with the requirements, standards, even the standards that the auditors are using when they're looking into that particular area. Staffing issues, it's one of the issues that have always been in our risk register to say we given, and it also relates to the budget issue. We don't have enough funds, and as a result, our staff complement is not necessarily, our establishment is not fully funded, and as a result, we've got vacancies. But we are doing the best we can do. We have had issues around staffing, resolution, natural attrition, basically, at the three state office, in which for some time, staff turnover was around 2 to 5, 40%, but those critical positions have been filled. So that particular TBT as a risk environment has been dealt with. Another recurring risk is the budget, but we are doing everything we can as an institution, and the only available means we have at this point in time is to contain expenditure. We are doing that. As we have seen from the report, we are trying, despite the fact that our budget has been reduced, we are working hard to make sure that we achieve organizational objectives. So we are doing okay there. And other, there aren't basically, apart from those mentioned, and the many other risks that have been identified in our risk register. In this period, the organization is not facing any particular risk, nothing in any. Another update on matters that could potentially affect the operations of the CGE, can affect the audit outcomes, are the ones that we have listed here. Contingencies, fraud issues, and litigation. We have reported those matters. I think we are just noting those matters for completeness of the report. We still have got the receivable from the former chairperson, pending case. However, as it were, we have our own internal oversight committee, good governance and social ethics. This matter has been referred to and has been dealt with there. It's still an issue. We're just making mention of it because it's a protracted issue. Another issue which has not been extinguished or dealt with, but we are just putting it here for completeness of record to say it has not been resolved. It was an issue between CD and Absolute. Absolute was suing CGT for cancellation of a contract. Absolute is a service provider. It has also been a protracted litigation matter, but it has not been resolved in this way that the claimant, Absolute, has been considered not to be cooperating, and the matter has been struck off the roll, basically. So it's no longer an issue. It was an issue to industry because it impacted on the audit outcomes. And with regard to fraud and related issues, we don't have any, there's no fraud. Despite the commission as part of its systems, we've got a fraud hotline in addition to our other internal fraud management activities. So it's a fraud hotline which is open to employees and members of the public. So for the period, we have not received any whatsoever claim or accusation of actual or potential fraud from either our employees or outsiders. So those are the issues that we are just putting them there so that our report is complete. And I think this will be the last slide. So slide chapters, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can people grab a cup of tea? Especially the young man who was just present, I'm sure his throat is dry. There's TV at the back, young man. There's TV. Everyone, I'm inviting everyone.
Thank you.
So?
Yeah.
Yeah. and it's turning into the same report. It's happened. You call it. Sebu? Are we coming back and discussing now? Members, can we continue? We're running short of time. Honorable members, may I just find out from you if there are areas for clarity? Because we're running out of time at the funeral, so we must actually be able to stick to the urgent areas of clarity if they do.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you to the CGE for the presentation. I just want to find out, with regards to, you know, we were discussing earlier regarding the races that you actually see, the different type of races, if there are any. Realize that if you're not actually seeing other races, you know, they don't seem to be using CGE as a facility that they can that can be used for women issues. What is it that you are actually gonna do to make sure that you tap into that? Because I know chairperson usually go to conferences, international conferences. Is there a way that you can actually find out, you know, from the origins of these other races, you know, how do they actually handle the issues of gender-based violence, and if that could actually be implemented back home? Also, with regards to the SONA as well, I see that, you know, you've done a lot of work to go through that and also to be very creative on coming up with issues pertaining to women. I just wanted I just wanted to say, according to my opinion, there's one part where you say that the grant has, you know, like women, it has improved the lives of women. I just don't agree with that, because the grant is for children. It's a children's grant, and it should also be seen as that, because what it has done is just it has alleviated poverty within the household, but not necessarily to say, you know, let's pinpoint a woman, because also men also they benefit from that. So it should be entirely seen as a household reducing poverty reducing tool that we have seen. Also, I just wanted to also find out where, when it comes to informal work for women and formal work, how are we doing, like, based on that? Have we actually looked at that to see, like, you know, how many women are unemployed and also who are in formal work and informal work, and also the ratio between the men and women in employment? And also the equal pay as well, you know, how are we doing based on that? I think for now, I think I'm okay. Okay, the other thing what I wanted to say is with regards to the finances. You're saying that you spend only 73% of the budget, but I think it's 73, but it's actually 76% of the budget. If you just mean, it could be a typo error, but if you look at what you, the total amount that you spend versus what you allocated, it's, I think it's about 76%. Thank you.
Just to continue, I was saying earlier on, maybe just to answer my colleague here, honorable member Longfair, on the issue of how the grant has benefited women. It's the same thing like fetching water in the river. When they put tests in the household, it benefits women, that the children and the women, whoever that is in the surrounding. Not only the service delivery matter, but women benefit that they no longer spend time in going to fetch water. So when you get a grant of a child, that grant benefits women because they no longer have the stress of feeding their children just to go out of the house, go and borrow money and all that and all that. It saves them, you know, that exercise of going, having a mashonisa and all that. So it also is a benefit to women apart from being a child grant. That is my understanding. But maybe Fiji has other answers, but I think there is a variety of answers that you can give to that particular question. But to continue, I was explaining earlier on to the TGE that whenever they make a presentation, they go into parables. It's like they are now talking to the, when Jesus was talking to the disciples in public, he would say, I'm not talking to you, I'm also talking to the community, so I'll talk in parables, but when you are inside, and now I'll talk to you in detail. So they know the details themselves. They're not giving us the details. They're talking to the community, to us. So I'm saying to them, they must give us the details because it helps us to even go to other people and explain, these are the issues that are mostly important that are affecting women. Maybe some of the things that they encounter, we don't encounter. So it helps us to broaden our scope of understanding issues that affect women. One of the examples that I raised here is that what are the gaps that are there that we can change in the Maintenance Act? They talked about the Maintenance Act, but they're not telling us what are the issues that they are encountering there, so that it helps us to change that particular act. So we won't be able to change the act for some time because we don't know what are the issues that affect women in our labor. Same applies to the traditional code. They need traditional leaders and they're saying the bill is coming back.
Mm.
But what are the issues that are extrapolated that we must also highlight or help each other also to face better that act so that it becomes an act that is sensitive to women and that women can be able to use it to defend women whenever the act is presented? Because we have acts like the Marriage Act, the one Marriage Act on not Camusobarelo, what is that? When you marry each other, you say 50-50, you share 50-50. That in community of property is a disadvantage act for women. And we're not amending that act yet. It has a lot of things that are a disadvantage to married women that are married in community of property. Those got married before 1994, it is now. There are people who can choose, but those ones who were married before 1994, they were compelled to get married in that act, and they are not protected today. So those are the issues. That if we have a chance to change this traditional act, court act, why don't we share information so that when even it goes, before it even becomes an act, we are able to input it in such a way that it helps women to have a say in the issues that are happening in those traditional courts. Same applies to sex workers. They are abusive things. That's what the patient says. Abusive things. What are they? And the police have put in measures, intervention sessions. What are those intervention sessions? You see, so you want us to help you to understand your issues when you raise them with the sex workers and the police and come up with an act that can help sex workers, but we don't know what are their issues that they're encountering. And the same applies to maternal health. The Department of Health is telling us that they are decreasing that thing, eh? And then they're also saying you're making investigations. What are the investigations you have that are underway, that are begun by CGE? Maybe something that you are doing reputation. Maybe Health Department is also doing something else. You are also doing it. But what is it? I don't know. I can't say much. In terms of SONA, I agree with most of the things that you have raised on the SONA, and I told myself most of the things that you raised there that I don't agree with you. I'll raise them with yourself outside the meeting so that I don't prolong the meeting. But if you can give me details on your presentation so that I can understand exactly what you're talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to CGE for the reports, and I think there's a lot of improvement. I've seen improvements since I first started in 2009. Just want to say, though, that I share the concerns of my colleagues here. I think we do need more detail so that we can be better empowered to help people on the ground. I've just been attending to some SMSs of a particular woman who's in plight. I won't go into the details now. She said, what can I do? Nothing seems to work. Nobody seems to listen. So what is it that you can do to help us, to help people who are desperate for their maintenance payment, where fathers are lavishing expensive presents on their children, but there's no money for food, there's no money for medication? Is there some way that we could put a mechanism in place that we can actually sort of approach the right person? We've got these tremendously long caseloads. People have been going back month after month, and you know their case just doesn't get attended to. And I really feel for women who are struggling financially, who've got to take time off work, get transport to the maintenance court, and then there's nothing further. Also, so you spoke about child marriages, the Kutwala, and various other things. So there have been investigations, there have been talks, but what are you actually doing? Are there individual cases which you are investigating and trying and responding to the situation? And again, could we be informed of those so that where we get information, we are better able to help the people who are desperate for help? So, one other one I'm very interested in is the your communication with the UN Special Rapporteur. I'd like to know what you actually achieved, because I had heard that there hadn't been the required communication or interaction with her. I did speak to her as well, just purely on a social occasion. But I'd like to know what was achieved, where did she meet with you, what was discussed, and what benefit have we had from her visit to South Africa. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Chair, and I apologize for my being late. I discussed with the portfolio committee with the Department of Basic Education. Nevertheless, I would like to, besides this presentation, which I'm grateful about, I'd like to make a request with the CGE Eastern Cape, the ones that are in East London, if they can make a follow-up. The Department of Social Development did not have SASSA cards the whole of the month of January. As a result, some of the people, a lot of women, have not got their grant. Am I clear? Yes. They didn't get their grant, and what is worse than that, during the process, I'll give you the follow-up numbers of the people you can contact. They, when they get there are no cards, and then they are referred to go to Gonubi police station. And when they get, they find that the police station is closed. Maybe the police come at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And when they sit there, they sit outside. As a result, one old lady died in the process. So I'd like CGE to make a follow-up on that one. I'll give you the contact number of the people you can contact. Also, if when you have got time, if you can just go to Fleet and have a look at the conditions in which these elderly women are being treated and taken care of, the ones that are going for their social grants. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you again, Chair. I just wanted, I forgot to ask two things to actually ask. I've been to this court here that deals with sexual harassment and harassment in general here in the Western Cape. In Cape Town, not far from, especially in Queen Street. And I've seen the, you know, the how efficient they are.
Remember the sexual offences first.
Yeah. The sexual offences court. And I've seen how efficient they are. So I just wanted to find out, like, in case of the cases that you have, because you have a lot of cases that are open, yes, you've closed about 40% of the cases. Do you actually sometimes maybe work with those kind of costs to refer some of your cases if you have an overload of cases that you're unable to close? And also with regards to the gender-based violence call center, do you also work with that call center? Do you refer some cases to that call center? Thank you.
Before CGE can actually answer, when you go to the SASSA offices, be very vigilant. They are sharing offices with a company that is now actually cancelling the SASSA cards and issuing other cards. Doing the same like you and her.
Mm-hmm.
And those are giving loans. Mm-hmm. Those old ladies and old men will never get out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
Please, CGE, that was my main question. You go in there accompanying an old lady or an old man, you see what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in Joburg, you must go to Mahonia Mall.
Now I'm just finding out the bigger processes, but they are there. And this is why our people don't get their money, because it's already deducted by the loan shark.
Sure, I propose this question. I think I think the CEO touched the issue of disability. Women that are disabled, we never report on them. So I think it has to be in their report all the time. They are not reporting disability of everybody, but they are reporting on women and girls that are disabled in the reports. I think that should be one thing that we report all the time. I don't know, but I felt that we should include it in the report.
Question is about the CGE also provide us with the uniformity and something that is binding all the commissioners in the work that has been done that links to the national goals and how the commissioners performance evaluated throughout the year and the specific roles at legal clinics, as well as how they ensure that issues raised at legal clinics are addressed in the province. And the other thing is about the commissioners should provide us also with a clear account of what each of them has achieved for the goals that are under review and how these are linked to the achievement of CGE's overall objectives and targets. Lastly, Chairperson, as the portfolio committee, would like also to thank the CGE for the transparency and honesty, because when we ask you to do something as the portfolio committee, you do it as soon as possible. So we'd like to thank you on that, and also would also like to the commissioner to account on your performance on a quarterly basis. So that we will see their performance reflected in the following annual report. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Chairperson. Let me start with the issue of the coordination between the commissioners and the commission. As if commissioners are a separate structure from the commission. So I think that's another very important issue, and as commissioners we try to share our best to actually indicate how as commissioners we do our work within the bigger scheme of things. And if you look at the commissioners' report chair, commissioners are a body that needs to oversee the work of secretariat. If we're in business, for say commissioners are board members, who are supposed to actually have five committees in the commission, those some committees should hold secretariat accountable, the CEO and the secretariat, and the CG Act provides for that. So the work that you see being produced in Parliament is also the work of the commissioners in terms of holding accountable, ensuring that we give a strategic plan. The strategic plan has its own strategy and annual performance, and we hold and we submit that as a compact between the Commission and Parliament to say this is our compact agreement on how we're going to achieve this. When we come here as commissioners, if the Commission is reporting on the work of the Commission, the CEO is assisting the commissioners to actually report on its work. And we've gone to say, okay, if Parliament wants us to explain what each individual commissioner is doing, let's include that within our presentation. But Chair, in terms of good governance principles, it's, important to allude to the fact that when we report here, this is exactly what the commission is reporting. This is what the commission is doing, and the commission is represented by commissioners, the CEO, and the staff members that are assisting the commission to do its work better. And therefore, we will also try by all means to report that. And in the report that we have in front of us, Chairperson, we also try to explain how the commissioners work in provinces, how the commissioners report on the committees of plenary, and how the commissioners are actually working with secretaries in terms of these issues. But the commission is a body, and that body is represented by the commissioners, and when we report here, assisted by the secretariats who are reporting the work of the commission. So I, Chair, with due respect, I just wanted to explain that what is very, very important. We don't want as a commission to have a situation where the staff members are saying, yeah, you heard in Parliament the secretary is doing more work and the commissioner is not doing what he's supposed to do, but the commissioners are the ones who are supposed to actually hold the head accountable. But when we report here, the buck stops with the commissioners, and we have to hold the CEO accountable. But we will do our best, that's why we have all these reports, we'll do our best to appease Parliament about the work that we do. Chair, I'll also come to another political issue raised by Honorable Chair. The question of, you know, where I used to work, we had what we call quarterly meeting and also thematic meeting. When we're reporting in Parliament on the queue, we are reporting against the annual performance of the institution. That's where I understand exactly where we're coming from. Then when we report against the annual performance of the institution, it's in a way we're just ticking the boxes and to say, this is what we've planned, this is what we're supposed to do. And then now, for example, I'll tell you a very good example about sex workers. It's an investigation. And we must say we are still continuing investigating. Just imagine if we can amplify all these issues to say these are the issues. And we must wait for the investigation to conclude. And then that report is going to be set before the committee. Another one is Matena. All those investigations, the GPV assessment report. Remember that once all those reports have been completed, we submit them to this Parliament. In most cases, you call us to come and account on those reports. And that's when we're able to actually get more information. But I think on issues like education reports, that's where we could amplify the issues of getting on the ground, on the spot, because already we have the information. Therefore, we also don't want to actually highlight issues around investigations that have not concluded. When you look at our slide 15, excuse me, of the presentation, you'll see that on the issues around complaints, as much as we cannot give you an individual detail, but you could tell that maintenance is one of the issues, you know. And then maybe what we can offer to do is maybe twice a year, maybe an analysis of those complaints to see what informs all these complaints. Remember that this Parliament, the committee last 3 weeks ago, they've advised us to include another one on harassment, which was taken seriously to say, in the next financial year, we're going to have another category on harassment. Mm-hmm. Because it's not only sexual harassment, there are other stalking and so on. Mm-hmm. So, but I think in perfecting what we do, then rather than maybe would say maybe Parliament should advise us in this committee to say, look, we just need an analysis of the complaint, you know. And when we come here, we say, okay, we are going to present on our annual performance, but in terms of analysis of complaints, this is what is happening. But when we go to page 19 of our slide, that's what we're trying to analyze what are the issues. For example, we know that gender-based violence is one of those. We know that maintenance is one of those. So all those issues we're trying to do, but what I'm trying to say is that we did not provide more information, we can find a way of actually explaining more on those issues. When it comes to research, Honorable Chiu as well, on the fact to produce reports which we normally lodge in Parliament, and those reports, in most cases, you call us to appear before you, and we tease out those issues in detail. The issue of, but again on investigations as well, we keep on reporting on these issues, because when we investigate, most of our systematic complaints, we find that people will find, will set up a date to say, we want to finish this investigation in 3 months. But the people that need to work with sometimes don't cooperate. A good example would be in KwaZulu-Natal, where we find that we want to actually speak to the media, and it's difficult to get access to the media. So those are critical issues. The issue by Honorable Majere around the issue of, it's important that sort of at least our accountability is not conflated with the complaint, that you assist us to fill in the complaint as an institution, so that an individual, an ordinary member, won't say you use your power as a member of parliament to actually fast track your own complaint, to follow the two processes and actually fill in the complaint form, so the institution will follow up on that particular complaint. If we feel that it falls within our mandate, we'll investigate. But if we feel that it does not fall within our mandate, we'll always refer to an appropriate organization. So for us, that is important. So the issue of the special rapporteur, honorable member, CEO, we received a letter from the Ministry for Women, because the special rapporteur was requested. The special rapporteur identified organization that he or she wants to meet with. We were identified as one organization that was supposed to meet with the special rapporteur. And the special rapporteur further requested us to organize other chapter institutions, like the Gender Commission, the Public Protector, the Culture and Human Rights Commission, and so on. So we organized them, we offered the venue for the special rapporteur to come and engage with chapter institutions, the so-called independent institutions. So we engaged the special rapporteur on that front. And the special rapporteur, we did not agree, there were so many other issues. For example, CRM is supporting Mutuala, we're not supporting Mutuala in that meeting. So the special rapporteur took that information and are going to use it to actually finalize the report. The special rapporteur informed us that the report might be ready by the end of March this year. So that's how we got to actually meet the special rapporteur. And we understand that they had a private meeting, with the minister, and also there was a media briefing which we sent the CGE people to attend that media briefing. But the media briefing by special rapporteur was economic with the details of the report. So we are still awaiting the special rapporteur report. So I think the CEO and the deputy chair and colleagues are still going to actually answer on some of the issues that I feel that maybe we did not look into. So yeah, in the issue of SONA as well, we put our gender lenses, honorable member, and when we use our microscope, and we felt that those are some of the issues. I think those issues are debatable. You know, it depends which microscope you are also wearing, and so on. So, and we might be wearing a gender lenses, but looking at things from a different angle. So for us, that is important. There's a question about race as well. I think the chair will assist me with that one. With the issue of the employment statistics, as much as we give those issues a CGE, but the Statistics South Africa has concrete information on that, and they report on those issues on a quarterly basis. As much as the research function, but if we get a CGE, we can use the data to conduct our own research. But their data is also adequate, because it also focuses on a number of issues. And therefore, and I think this is already the issue of the care workers as an institution, that that's one area where TAMU studies are not assisting us to actually assist South Africa to actually move from that issue. Yeah, let me just put Chairperson, give a chance to other colleagues that are here. But on the issue of disability, honourable member, I think we're looking how we could report on those issues in terms of employment equity, what we're advocating as an institution when we engage with different institutions and so on, in terms of policies, the work that we do and so on and so forth. I think those are the issues. So can you allow give the chair, the CEO, the CFO, Bokri, and the other colleagues just to respond on some of the issues that you've touched on?
Thanks. But before the other members jump in, I would like to know whether the MOU of the Chapter 9 Institute is still standing.
Yeah. The Chapter 9, now we term them the constitutional bodies.
Okay.
We have a forum of constitutional bodies where we all sit together.
Mm-hmm.
We have the terms of reference, which we have all signed, and have been accredited to a commission work together. So that is still standing, and we work together in relation to that. So I know Deputy Chair myself is sitting that committee.
No, it's fine.
Thank you, honourable members. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just run through some of the issues that I highlighted. The first one relates to the diversity issue. And to say that as the commission, in fact, the word has gone out to all our provinces to say they must make sure that there is diversity of reach. There is diversity of reach. But I think it's important to put it on the table that in our provinces, as you can see, we are thinly spread. And so the approach we have decided to take this year, moving forward, is to target organizations that work in those communities, because we just can't go ourselves to each and every place to try and reach everyone. So we're emphasizing on working in partnership with civil society organizations, faith-based organizations that are able to reach the diversity that we're talking about, so that we can get the input from them and we service them. Also, the sexual offences court and community court, we do refer cases. In fact, some of the cases that come to us is because the system is clogged in those courts. And so what we do, we unlock that on their behalf. We don't necessarily handle cases ourselves, but people come to us when they have a problem that they are unable to resolve. And then we unlock the system for people. The call center, people reach us via, we also have our number that we try as much as possible to say if people are in trouble somewhere there, just give them our number. We will unblock it. If it means that we don't have to deal with it, a phone call to SASA, to social development, we can do that. But it is not, we have to analyze whether it's gender-based, but we are not going to say to a person, we are not going to take your blind. We don't work. That's why at Chapter 9 we have an agreement that we share information. If it has to go to human rights, it goes to that. If we have to take it to the public protector, it goes to the public protector. If it goes to the CRM commission, it may go to the CRM, depending on the nature of the issue. Linking our work to the national goals, that's exactly what we do. We look at the national goals, we look at what we do, and we evaluate. does this add to nation building social cohesion this way? Does it add to security as a national goal that we have in terms of our country contract? I just want to also stress what the chairperson has said. I was even writing here that half a day probably is part of the pressure that makes us write reports that don't have details. We would like to have more time to actually share what comes out from issues that we get when we interact with communities, the issues that people deal with. That's why we just say maintenance issues. Issue of estate. There's more to it that we can give, but what the time. So maybe an agreement of once in 6 months, this type of meeting literally takes a day. Then we can do the formal thing of reporting and then workshop the rest. Thank you. Oh yes, on the issue of socio-economic issues, ma'am, of the social grant, it's actually an obligation on the state to make sure, in terms of Section 27, that people have housing, food, care, water, social security. So it's part of social security to ensure that people have got something that makes sure that they have food, they have they can provide for their children, they have education.
I just want to say that I know that's why I'm saying I'm still not alone.
My issue was not that I'm quitting the grant. All what I'm saying is to actually say that it's an achievement for a woman to get a grant, it is not, I don't think it is such. Because if, I just want to say, what I'm saying, the grant, it has alleviated poverty within a household. So that means men have benefited from that, they benefit from that. Women are benefiting and the child is benefiting. So to just take out the woman and say the woman has benefited, I think, for me, I think it's not right. I think the household, the entire house has benefited. It's like, for instance, if you say my husband has received a job, is working in a mine, and you say that because the husband has a job, the woman has benefited. It's a household that benefits from the grant. That is what I was trying to point out. It's not specific as to say that the woman has benefited. Yes, she has benefited like everybody else within the household. That's the point that I was trying to make.
Okay. Let me allow other people to chat.
I think we can debate this until my check will come home from you.
Yeah.
Because the issue of feminization of poverty comes to the at the center of you.
Yes.
So whether you say it, with due respect, I don't remember, but I think we're saying poverty is feminized. Therefore, if it's feminized, when we try to include that poverty, will benefit from. So I think that's the question, and I think it depends where you come from this perspective. I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to agree the number of parliament, but those are the issues that I'm going to bring to you.
Thanks.
Oh,
sorry.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, I was just want to, in a sense, augment the statement made by our chair concerning the performance of the commission. There's a sense in which, perhaps also as the deputy chair has indicated, that there may be a need for sharing with the honourable members how, for example, the commissioners, how they implement and make practical the mandate in the constitution of CGE, what is in the act, through the medium of the handbook of commissioners, because that is what is a tool that commissioners have used to interpret the constitution, interpret the acts, as to how they are going to operationalize that. So that, because I think the reporting may tend to leave a gap about that. and perhaps in this extended for a meeting, we could also do that. We, in a brief, face a brief summary of the commissioner's manual. It will give the members, I mean, a sense, a handle on how then we're supporting, you know, things. There seems to be a hiatus, seems to be a gap there that needs to be filled by sharing that information that is contained in the commissioner's manual.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make that point. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Chair, I'm not sure I could add on that. I think work is correct. Maybe we need to share circulate the commissioner's input.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, the commissioner's conditions are supposed to come from Parliament. What we use as a commission is the CG Act to do our work. We just to move the little bit further, we even ask the Public Service Commission just to assist us in the drafting of commissioner's job description. But we know that is supposed to come from Parliament, the condition, the job description, everything. Because commissioners always say the equals amongst the equals. So Parliament must assist us in terms of this. And I think with a new set of commissioners going forward, because some of us are living in a year's time, and I think Parliament, through the chairperson and Parliament, must assist the commission to have all these things in line. Because we cannot develop the system that's going to actually monitor ourselves. So that at least we have all these tools in place. We're able to hold the commissioners accountable. But with that, and I think what we've developed internally is the commissioner's simple, just to assist us, indicate what the commissioner does in the problem, what the commissioner does at the national level. And I think our office, they are going to actually share that. But we're also utilizing other prescripts like King 123, the Companies Act, and so on. Because we're imposing, you have to be. When we investigate by the Auditor General as well as the Public Protector, some of those issues came up to say these are other principles that we can use as a Police Commissioner to ensure that you are accountable as an institution, you hold the Secretariat accountable, and are able to report to Parliament accordingly.
Okay.
Okay.
Chairperson, I still don't understand really that. You know, when you do a PowerPoint presentation, the initial PowerPoint presentation was one sentence or one word, and then you elaborate on the word. So if we have to do that PowerPoint presentation, that word you have to explain what does it, you give the details when you do the presentation. Maybe we must put back the power presentation to be that, you see, so that they give us details. Because at this point in time, I don't understand why you don't give it really. Now, your strength, in page 24, you say, there are no adequate empowerment programs for girl children and boy children in schools. What do you mean? And then you say, that no power, adequate empowerment programs, and hence, the dropout is so alarming. And I would say the dropout is not caused by programs, adequate programs. I don't agree with that. So what do you mean in the sentence? Because the dropout is also caused by kids not able to write sentences when they are in grade 8 and 9. You know? Kids in the language issue, the issue of English is the one that causes dropouts of kids dropping out from grade 8 and 9 and 10. So which adequate empowerment programs are you talking about here? So these are the things that I'm saying. When you make a presentation, it has to be clear. What are you saying? And what are you telling me? Because when, seriously, it's not that you're going to give me a paragraph, but tell me what are the issues that affect sex workers. So that when sex workers sit here, I'm able to relate that city, he told me, these are the issues. Maybe they did not raise it, or they are raising it at that point in time. We're able to help each other. So your presentation must help me to be empowered, so that it's not like I'm questioning you, you're not doing your work, you're supposed to do your work. You need to give me information. That's all I'm asking for. Give me information so that it empowers me. When I sit with the DTIA,
I'll be able to say women are encountering these problems. Attempt to eat when you do your economic issues and ensure that you empower women on this and that and that. And you have a better life because you sit with these people every day. So you have a better life to empower me on the issues that I'm supposed to raise when I'm with other people. That's all I needed, check. And I still think that it can be done in a presentation. You don't have to do a PowerPoint with this thick document. You can do a one page idea, and then you present all the things that you have been presented in the page.
Honorable Trevor, your point is taken, but may I plead with everybody here, you're supposed to finish up at one. Allow members to go in to have their lunch because we should be seated before 2 in the house. I haven't allowed you to go. No, you didn't ask for permission. That has been painted out is very vivid and clear.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the good work. That's why I asked if the MOU was still standing. You remember I couldn't that. And thanks to the members and for the clarity. It's actually making us all scratch the back of our minds and prepare for the next meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is... I think we have to have a meeting for
I said so that when you said that the book Thank you.